Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 28th of November, 2011. And of course, we're talking to our regular Monday guest, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster at theinternationalforecaster.com. So, Bob Chapman, thank you once again for joining us today, tonight. And what's on your mind this evening?
Well, I'm flying in on a wing and a prayer, and it's cold. Very unusual. But then again, we live in a very unusual world. This morning we have a couple of events which are very interesting. About 6 weeks ago, I said that the Fed should have began QE3 on September the 15th, which they didn't do. But I said it's coming. And here we are 6 weeks later, and the rumor is this morning, and that's why the Dow is up 250 points, is that the Fed is going to purchase toxic garbage from banks. Those are the bonds which contain mortgages, which the Fed never tells you what they pay for them, or really what they're worth, because there's no market for them. And they unfolded, I guess, now. And they had to have known this as long as I have and kept it undercover, so to speak. It's about $547 billion, I remember the figure. And we just put it into the International Forecaster. And I had projected $500 billion to $1 trillion, and all the companies aren't in there. So my guess is it'll be around $800 billion, maybe $750. And why is this important? Well, it relieves the stock brokerage firms and banks, probably insurance companies too, of this overhang of toxic waste, which is on their second set of books. They keep two sets of books. If you and I did that, we all go to jail. And that second set of books is things that they are going to write off over the next 50 to 100 years, for those of you who don't know that. And so they're going to relieve that book, so to speak, of about $750, $800 billion worth of these bonds. And how are they going to be paid for? Well, of course, it'll all be digital, but it's money created out of thin air. Now, what will the banks and brokerage firms and others do with this money? It's already been arranged because the major banks in New York own the Fed. So they tell the Fed what to do. This business of Mr. Bernanke making decisions is a fairy tale. He just does what he's told, just like Greenspan before him. It's just that Greenspan was a better talker. And this money is going to be taken to purchase treasuries. Those treasuries and agency securities, which is Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie, and FHA, will be purchased by these entities. And part of that money will be used for speculation to keep the stock market up. What kind of leverage they're going to use, I don't know. I would guess at a minimum of 20 to 30 to 1. In some firms like Goldman and Morgan, they'll go 100 to 1. And that means that the stock market is saved from being tested. Well, that remains to be seen, just how successful this is going to be. Because these people, these rumor mongers, they've known for weeks what the deal is. They just haven't talked about it. And that's why the market has stayed up, relatively speaking. And every time the market goes down, they come in with some projection like this. Anyway, that's why the market's up today. That's where the money's coming from. That's how it's going to be used. And the flip side of that is that inflation is going higher. Now, we still have QE2 and stimulus 2 in the pipeline. That'll show up during the course of this year. Now, excuse me, it's going to be joined by QE3. And when you inject funds from outer space, if you may, into the economy in that way, they immediately, those funds immediately are into the economy because they're spent by the federal government and the agencies. So with that said, we're going to have lots more inflation than we planned on. I had projected real inflation this year of around 14%. Alas, John Williams' figure I saw was 11.6. Maybe we're not going to make 14. Maybe we'll only make 12. But what will it be next year? 20? We'll have to wait and see, but it's not going to be good. So the other part of the flip side is gold is up $31 this morning. And I think this is going to stick. Finally, what they're going to do is now become public knowledge. The second important event is that Europe is desperate. They are absolutely panicked because under the rules of the Maastricht Treaty, which most people forget, which was 12, 13 years ago, they can't do the things that they want to do in order to keep the euro together and keep six countries that are insolvent from going officially bankrupt. They had used the EFSF, which is a fund which was used to buy bonds that were either in the market or were issued, mostly issued, by these countries to keep them going because the bond markets would not accept bonds, new bonds, from these countries. And the European Central Bank didn't want to buy them. And so that's how they did it, sort of a sideways approach. But anyway, that approach is not powerful enough to work. The ECB has bought Italian and Spanish bonds, not in tremendous amounts, but they bought them. Now, what's going on here is this. The Eurozone in Europe, the European Union, is really in dire straits because I think they have had to decide to cut loose these six countries, let them go bankrupt, default, back to their currencies, put their own house in order, excuse me, and the upshot of that is it still doesn't solve the problem of the debt that's going to be in the debt that is going to be taken upon the banks and the sovereign nations. Sovereign nations don't care too much about that, but they do about the banks. So it's going to be up to the governments in France and Germany, etc., to, they call it, reorganize. The word I use is it's a subsidy from the public of those countries through their central bank, the Bank of France, the Bundesbank, to the banks to reward them for screwing up the entire system. I mean, they've made such a colossal mess out of things. Why would anyone want to save them? And I want to interject something very important here. And I've said this in the program before last week. It is very important that the whole banking structure collapses. And I know you people aren't going to like that because unless you're in gold and silver related assets, you're probably going to lose somewhere between 60 and 90% of what you have. And that's not nice. But you people, you weren't paying attention. And you allowed the bankers and the governments to get away with this. The governments are controlled by the bankers. And so what's going to happen eventually anyway is the system is going to go down. And why it's important that it does even though the pain that's going to be inflicted, and there's no way back. You cannot escape it. That is the core. That is the heart. That is the key to the power of the Illuminati. This is how they control the world, is through the banking systems. They simply have a license to steal and control. We've got to take that away from them and ban them from banking and things akin to it forever. And then we can stop them from doing what they're doing. Things like the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve have to be done away with. Coming back, these nations in Europe, even if they bail out the banks, it's not going to be a solution. It'll just be another effort to buy time. Because they know it, what they have created is inevitable. Now, you say to yourself, well, if that's all true, how do they expect to remain in power? And it's the same way they've done it over and over and over again for centuries. They have another war. And the French government came out this morning and said, the days of Syria are numbered. Well, I think anybody who's a casual observer might have come to that conclusion anyway, but it's official. This is NATO. They intend to intervene sometime in the next, I would say, month and a half, by mid-January, in Syria. But there's a fly in the ointment, and that is that Russia has a large naval base there, and the U.S. has already, via NATO, put up a shield, no-fly zone. And if they go in and start bombing Syria, they're going to have to deal with the Russians. And their equipment is as good, if not better, than American equipment. And I think the U.S. is going to have some serious problems, but it would be the beginning of World War III. And that's how they extricate themselves from these situations which they have created historically and are presently. Excuse me. And so I think that is where we're headed with all of this. As the movement to get everybody to look in the direction of Syria and the possibility of a world war, which probably wouldn't involve China as well. And that could go on for years. Would it be nuclear? Probably. Who would start that? Probably Israel. And I think in this kind of a war, perhaps Syria and Israel both might disappear from the face of the earth. I mean, this is going to be big time. And so what would that eventually do to markets? With the exception of gold and silver shares, bullion, coins, everything's going down. And so you don't want to be there. Anyway, that's what's going on in Europe. But there's one more thing, and it shows you the arrogant brazenness of these people. While this problem has developed over the last 10 years, an unnatural association, the Eurozone and the European Union, it's a disaster. It just didn't work, and I won't go into the details because I have here on the program before. And what they're trying to do, now they have the European Central Bank, the EFSF, which is the European Financial Stability Fund. They have another one you've never heard of called ESM in Brussels, which they're going to work out of Liechtenstein. And, excuse me, not Liechtenstein, Luxembourg. I've been to both places many times, and I always mix them up. Anyway, what they're trying to do in Germany, because Germany's the key, and in order to enter this ESM between now and the end of the year, all these other nations have a schedule to vote on the ESM. The citizens of their own countries don't even know or have ever heard of the ESM. Okay. They got to vote on that. And Germany, in the meantime, is going to what Mrs. Merkel, former communist, and what she's doing in the CDU, I'll never know. That's the Christian Democratic Union. She is going to fast-track proposals for European Union treaty changes to enforce budget discipline. That's the excuse. The key to solving the euro debt crisis, it's a scam. What they want those nations, and particularly Germany, to okay, is a plan where eight people and Luxembourg run the internal fiscal finances of each country. They have nothing to say about how much they spend, what they spend it on, nor to the local political effect upon their countries. They're giving up fiscal control of their countries. They're giving up their sovereignty. And they expect through that, that what they will do is be able to form a core, permanent core, Eurozone, as well as a stronger European Union. And it's not going to work. 65% of Germans are against this. And there's been numerous polls. I read a newsletter last night from someone I've known for years, telling us just the opposite. I don't know why these writers lie about this stuff. I mean, we're journalists, we're reporters, we give our slant, excuse me, and this is early in the morning, so we get those kind of things. They can't stick with the truth. And the only reason they would do that is to curry favor with government. And that's what a lot of these writers are doing. I'm not talking about the New York Times and Le Monde and Paris. I'm talking about newsletter writers. And I think it's disgusting. They put out false information. And it's getting worse all the time. And there's some entities that specialize in it, which I won't get onto on this program. But in Germany, in Europe, they know that from December the 7th and January the 10th, there's virtually nothing goes on in Europe. I lived there for years, so I know. There's a meeting this coming Friday, December 2nd, and they want to give this a boost. And then there's another meeting on the 9th and 10th. I don't know what I don't know which group it is, but anyway, they're supposed to try to push this through the Bundestag and the Bundesrat sometime soon. I don't think they're going to be able to do it until mid-January because Europe just goes into a holiday mode. All right, with that said, this is where this is headed. And it's not about saving the euro, because they think they can save it with a core group of, say, 10, with seven of them going under. And so what it's really about is convincing, supposedly, all these pro-one world of politicians, technocrats, which are bankers, and bureaucrats, all of whom in Europe agree with world government. You don't have dichotomy over there. It's almost always totally one way. We want world government. Americans don't understand that. What is the excuse for it? Well, if we're all together, we can't kill each other, so we won't have any more wars. That's the pablum that they've been fed, that they're used to eating. And it doesn't work that way. But the people in power, the elitists, that's what they shove down their throats. So that's where we're headed in Europe. That's where we're headed. In the United States, the buoyancy in the market and the economy, which will last probably 3 to 6 months, that'll be the end of it, if it lasts that long. And a perpetuation of inflation, and then the ongoing saga of the criminal events we've seen with MF Global, the commodities firm that went bankrupt. All I can say is this. I think most of you know the details. Why would a man with tremendous experience as a bond trader make a one-way bet buying the bonds of nations that are insolvent? I think the only reason why is the powers behind government, and government told him to do that. And that's why he hasn't been manacled and taken to Rikers Island, like our dear French friend, the head of the IMF, Mr. Strauss Kahn, because it's a setup. It's a setup. Why? To get the bonds purchased, to take them off the market. And number two, the firm goes under, and Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase buy it for 10 cents on the dollar. The people with money in their accounts had it all stolen. Their positions were blown out. Whether they'll ever get paid remains to be seen. But it shows you the brazen, arrogant operations that go on. These people just don't care. They do anything they want, and they think they can get away with it.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Well, that's certainly a mouthful, and you've covered so many different aspects of the illusions that are going on right now in order to perpetuate the myth of the status quo, which maintains the elite's ability to rule over the system. And I use that word elite advisedly. And there are so many points that I'd like to pick up on from what you've said, but going back to the very beginning of tonight's conversation where you brought up the Fed getting ready, or rumored to be getting ready, to buy the toxic assets off of the secondary books of the banks with the funny money that they print out of nothing. It's one of the interesting parts of that, and something that reveals the three-ring circus nature of all of this, is the fact that the Dow is up on the rumor that the Fed is going to be starting up the printing press, figuratively speaking. And so many of the people out there, unfortunately, for some reason, look to the Dow as if it's some sort of bellwether of the economy, when people in the know really know and realize that that just means that it's an inflationary pressure, and the rising Dow in an inflationary dollar means that ultimately you're going to be left with as little or even less than you had to begin with. And then on the other side of that, there's the gold, the rising gold prices, which people in the know means that the actual value of the gold is increasing relative to the devaluing dollar. But then the people who are looking at that from the mainstream perspective would say, oh, it's just another bubble. So we have this double system going on, where there are people who know what's going on and people who don't. And it's interesting to see sort of the mirror of the rising Dow and the rising gold prices.
Well, one thing, excuse me, one thing people should take note of is all the markets in the world are manipulated, and have been for some years. The manipulation really didn't get underway but for around 1996-97. And today, the President's Working Group on Financial Markets manipulates all markets 24/7. Now, there are times that markets slip through their fingers. They can't control everything all the time effectively. They have their fallbacks and shortcomings. But as long as you have a situation like this, you have tremendous distortion. There are no free markets. They are what these people want them to be. But as you go on in time, more and more people catch on. They either don't play the game anymore, or they play the side that government is playing. they know the routine, so to speak, and play within that structure. Now, I'm watching the tape. I'm a former tape reader. I was a trader for 25 years. I own my own brokerage firm for a number of years. And markets have rhythms. And right now, the United States government is in the silver and gold market trying to cap silver at a dollar plus for the day and gold at $30. And with the Dow at $250, they figure they'll give it that much for the moment. But that's what's going on. And it goes on every single day. You can see when they come into the market because they're so heavy-handed. They don't care whether you know it or not, that they're rigging everything. And, you know, maybe later in the day, gold will run up $50 on the day, which would be justified. The point is this, you're dealing with a rigged market. And if you're not in gold and silver-related assets, forget it. We see a dollar that's selling at 78, 88 on the USDX, which is down about 0.80 on the day. Because of the problems in Europe and the problems that may occur in the Middle East over the next couple of months, the dollar is trading stronger. Is it because the dollar and the United States economy is stronger? No. It's because other currencies are weaker, particularly the euro. Will the dollar test 80 on the upside on the USDX? Probably. Will it break higher? The answer probably is yes. Where will it go? To 86, to 88, like it did before. And then probably we'll have a raging war, and all currencies will go down, and gold and silver will be the place to be. But that's the way they rig these things. And we might even get up to plus 300 in the Dow today. They have to make up for lost time. They've been planning this. They started their buying last night in Japan and overnight in the access markets. You could see it. Just as an example, last night at 11 o'clock, gold was up 20.40, silver was up 67 cents, and about an hour ago, gold was up 27.30 and silver 102. And it shows you the progression of what's going on, and they intend to keep the Dow up on the day. So if you're going to be a player, you got to know these things, because if you don't know them, it's going to cost you a lot of money. Your government is your enemy, and don't ever forget it.
Wise words indeed. And for me, one of the interesting things about this is that once you put the truth goggles on and you do see through the manipulation of the system and you see what the system is really based on, you start to see the news stories in a very different way, and stories that might not have really piqued your interest before suddenly take on new significance, like this one that came across my desk the other day from BBC News. It's entitled Chavez Repatriates Venezuela's Foreign Gold Reserves, and it starts by saying Venezuela has received its first shipment of gold bars after President Hugo Chavez ordered the repatriation of 85% of the country's bullion reserves. The gold was unloaded from a plane and taken under heavy guard to the central bank in the capital, Caracas. And it goes on to say that central bank chief Nelson Morentes said the return of the gold to Venezuela was an historic act. It has historic value, it has symbolic value, and it has financial value, he said. The country's finances will be backed by autonomous wealth, so we are not subject to pressure from anyone. So there are many, many bad things to be said about the Chavez regime in Venezuela, but it certainly seems that they know what the system's really based on and how to secure their wealth.
Well, their economy's really starting to come apart. And the subsidies is what keeps Chavez in power. And it's very typical of a totalitarian government. Anything that was worth anything, they've nationalized. And, you know, you didn't have to be a genius to figure it out. And he and Fidel Castro are very tight together. And they are communists. And they both happen to be subscribers to my publication as well. But be as it may, they know what's going on. And he wants the gold in Caracas. And I can understand that because inflation is running around 30%. It's only a matter of time before the currency collapses. And once that happens, before he dies, unfortunately for him, he's ill. And I think it lasts 5-6 years maybe, but that's probably it with the kind of cancer that he has. So I think what he wants to do is make things right and set up a background for a currency backed by gold. And that's what he's shooting for. And the reason he's come to this conclusion has nothing to do with Mr. Castro and everything to do with the Chinese and Russian governments.
Can you elaborate on that aspect of it?
Well, yeah, they tell him, look, this is what you should do. This is the way things are going to go in the future. We're buying gold hand over fist, encouraging our citizens to do so, just like they do in India. And gold's going to be a lot more usable than some currency, whether it's the yuan or the ruble or the, gee, I don't know what they use for currency in Venezuela, but we'll call it the peso or the or something like that. But anyway, the thought process is the eventual solvency of the currency and the government. And this method of which they're using to break down the economy is to wipe out the middle class and the wealth of the country owned locally. And then government will be in control of the whole country and the people behind government who control government, who live in New York City.
Yes, exactly right. Well, actually, it's the Venezuelan Bolivar, not the peso. But
Bolivar, that's it. Excuse me for forgetting.
No problem at all. It's early in the morning for you, and it's late in the evening for me. So we're both a little off kilter. But okay, well, shifting our focus to the other side of the world, obviously we've seen some renewed protests and things going on in Cairo as the Egyptians realized that they, in fact, didn't actually change anything by throwing out the one puppet dictator and just allowing the real ruling military junta to continue to act exactly as they have been for decades. So we've seen some renewed unrest happening in Tahrir Square and in Cairo generally. In Egypt. And the latest from the AP just an hour ago is that long lines at polls as Egypt holds landmark vote. So apparently they're going back to the polls for some type of election. I'm not even sure exactly what type of election this is. The first parliamentary election since Hosni Mubarak's ouster. So what's your take on what's happening in Egypt and what's likely to play out there?
The whole, we'll call it a revolution. Was planned, financed, promulgated, and executed by the CIA and MI6. Gang 1 was replaced by Gang 2. In this case, the Gang 2 is the military that cooperated with the U.S. and Great Britain. Mubarak had been told about a month before he had problems in Egypt that you either do what we tell you to do, or you're out of here. And they had told him that they wanted him to back their position on Libya, and he wouldn't do it. And because of that, he's no longer there. And that was really the main reason. And the British created the Muslim Brotherhood in 1923, I think it was. And they and the CIA have controlled it strongly since World War II, at the end of World War II. And what they're doing is bringing radicalism into the government because I think they want, as an alternative, to have the ability to pit Muslim against Muslim. And I think that's what's in the back of their mind. I think that's why Egypt, which is a very large country in that scheme of things in the Middle East, if they were to get involved in conflict with neighbors, not Israel, but maybe Israel, but more so with other members, that would create a very confusing situation. And people would say, well, gee, why are those Muslims running around killing each other? Why aren't they over there chasing those Israelis? And so that's a very distinct possibility. And don't forget, these people who are in control behind the scenes have thousands of people working 24/7. These people are experts at figuring out how to go about doing this, that, and the other thing. And war is a part of what they create. It's a business. The business of staying in power and getting ever more wealthy. And so that might be the reason why. The Egyptian people are not very happy, but the people behind the scenes could care less whether the Egyptian people are happy. I mean, if they had their way, half of them would get killed because they believe there's too many people on the face of the earth. We need to get rid of 60 to 90% of them. So that would fit with that. So I think this may be the planning behind what's going on. It might be an antithesis to the lack of war over Syria. I mean, these people just don't have one act going on at the same time. They have several in that genre, just like they have in finance and economics and politics and on and on. This is a very complex, compound problem that we face. It isn't as simply as the Muslims are bad and the Christians are good. It's nothing like that. I mean, those groups get involved. The reason they get involved is they're set up to get involved that way. I mean, what do you think the Crusades are all about? It was to create a power structure financially. That's what that was all about. But I'm not going to get into that this morning. It's too old of a story for today.
I guess so, but it is something that I think the listeners need to reflect on. And if they don't know about that history and the Templars and the foundation of the banking system and all of that, it's extremely fascinating. So hopefully we can get into that another day. But as you say, we're perhaps drawing to the end of this conversation. But again, some extremely important points, and I really hope people do cogitate on that and really reflect on how they like to set up these multi-dimensional chess games with all sorts of different layers and strata of propaganda interacting at different levels for different layers of society. And it is a system that's just so overwhelming that at some point it really does inspire awe. I mean, it's just something so amazing that this has been put together. And it's unfortunate that these brilliant minds are working on how to enslave humanity rather than how to set it free. But that's why we need people like yourself out there trying to get the word out about this and trying to get people into the chess game so they understand what's going on and how to prepare themselves for what's coming. And on that note, of course, I would once again recommend that people get into the International Forecaster if they haven't yet done so. So let's talk a little bit about the Forecaster and how people can get their hands on a copy.
The Forecaster is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, runs around 35 or 40 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the internet. Everything you need to know every week is in that publication. And you can get free copies by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, Forecaster.com. You can also go to www.intforecaster.com, intforecaster.com. For those of you who would like a question answered, or if you'd like a copy of either, or if you'd like a copy of our latest report on gold and silver shares, email us, and that address is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com, Bob at intforecaster.com. And for those of you who would like to call toll-free, that number is 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178. 7878. You can get free copies there. And also, for those of you who would like to become subscribers, they have a special offer. They are a free one-year subscription, and the deal that they're making is really terrific, so take advantage of it.
Well, you know, last week I was remarking on a rather surprising Donald Trump quote that opened the last issue of The Forecaster. And this week, looking at this week's last issue, Saturday's issue, I was delighted to see a really interesting little take you had on the whole dynamics of the debtor-lender relationship that you take from a Billie Holiday song, God Bless the Child. And I thought that was really well done. So I hope people who are subscribed to the Forecaster did note that. And I find it interesting. You're always throwing in musical quotes or things about plays that were written back in the 60s and things like that. I really enjoy that. So I hope you do that some more.
Well, thank you. We get an awful lot of emails from people. Don't get many letters anymore. And they love these letters from fellow subscribers. And these gentlemen who fought in World War II, one of them is a very good friend of mine. He's 88 now. And his son's a subscriber. And I remember when he was 8, and now he's closing in on 50. And, you know, you go back a long way and you have a trail, and all of a sudden people pop up that you used to know years and years ago. And I put all of that in there, the perspectives, all kinds of different things that interest me. And they obviously interest other people.
They certainly do. I mean, it's genuinely interesting stuff to read. So again, once again, if you're not subscribed to the International Forecaster, why not? And hey, while you're at it, I'm actually starting my own kind of mini newsletter this week at CorbettReport.com. So people who are interested in that can become a subscriber and help myself out as well. But at any rate, Bob Chapman, it's always a pleasure talking to you. So thank you so much for your time again, and I look forward to next week.
Well, you're welcome. And I look forward to every Monday morning, because for the week, that's when I'm the sharpest, I think.
Well, it's good to have you here. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.